Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
From grandmothers who whispered in their baby girl ear, to fathers on dimly lit street corners instructing young soldiers to always keep their eyes open, you be queen, you were fire, you were passed through centuries on the hands of your daughters, they called you wisdom. Proverbs, on the backs of diamond-eyed school children who grew into hymnals recited by amethyst-holding urban philosophers who recited neighborhood commandments out of the windows of restored El Camino chariots to keep the warmth in their blood. Be wise. Be smart. Be black opal, brown quartz, bloodstone, and prayer. Be every form of gem. See, king told scribe, scribe told son, son told wife, wife told her daughter, and daughter told the ancestors, and the ancestors told me that you would come to give wisdom to thousands. They said you would come, dropping gem, dropping gem.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Dropping Gems podcast. I'm your host, Debbie Brown. Today's show, I'm super hyped because this girl is a fave of most of the people that I've run into. It's funny because sometimes people see that we talk on Instagram and they'll be like, oh my God, you know her?
What?
I'm like, not only do I know her, that is my friend.
That is so funny to hear.
Today's show, we have just one of the bossiest boss women in the business. She is killing it in the broadcasting world. You first saw her on TMZ, where she really broke so many barriers and created lanes for so many people that came after her. She then went to The Insider. You have seen her taming wild, wild conversations as the Love and Hip Hop reunion host. And she is currently a host on E! With two of her own shows, Nightly Pop, Dating No Filter, and you have seen her on every red carpet giving absolutely serving looks and giving expert commentary as a news correspondent. So without further ado, we have the eyebrow god herself, the
not
full-time
today,
soul snatcher, Miss Nina Parker is on
hey,
the
girl.
Show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited we can make it happen.
I know. You know what? I want to fill everybody in and how we first met. I was trying to think back. I was like, dang, at what point did we like fall in friend love?
I know. I remember how I met you.
It's been a long time. Okay, you tell me and I'm going to tell you.
We were backstage at a CeeLo. I went to...
My God.
Yes, it was... I feel so old. What was CeeLo's group's name? What was the group's name? What group was CeeLo in?
Oh, Gnarls Barkley?
Wasn't there one before that?
Oh, Goody Mob.
Goody Mob.
Yeah, of course. Why yeah.
Oh, we went... It was a Goody Mob, like... something. And CeeLo was performing and Echo invited me. Our friend Echo, who's in PR, had invited me and you were there and I had seen you just like on social media, I think. at the time. I'm not sure what social media we were using, but I remember giving you my business card and I was like, hi, you know, I'm Nina from TMZ. And I introduced myself to you and gave you my card and you were super nice. We were both backstage and, you know, cause you were doing radio. And yeah. I think I was just like, you were just somebody I wanted to know. And mind you, this is like when I was kind of still new to LA. So I was just like, she just seems like somebody who would be cool to know. And I remember introducing myself and being like, hit me up. Here's my email. If you need anything, like if you get any stories. And you were like, okay, and super cool. But that's the first yeah. time we met.
I remember, and I thought it was so cool. Just you being like a dope ass black woman on TMZ and like killing it in the broadcasting world. And I loved, like, from the moment we met, I just loved the way you carried yourself.
Oh,
and
you
were
you.
So funny, but so gracious. And you just had so much integrity, which especially in that space,
right?
Like the space of specifically TMZ gossip right. heavy space. It's so rare.
Right.
Like normally when you, at least back then, would meet people in that space, you'd kind of like maybe want to take a shower later mm-hmm. because you felt like you were getting finessed for right. like information,
right.
or, you know? And I was like, yo, she's dope. And then I remember, okay, so I don't know if you remember this, but one of my biggest memories of our like early friendship was you like did me a super solid.
I did?
What yeah. was it? So at that time, so what I was really, really early on the curve of was whenever I'd have an interview, sending it places.
Okay.
This is before, obviously, far before Instagram. Mm-hmm. And it's before like blogs have evolved into what they are now.
Right.
So like most talent in radio did not cut up bits and pieces of their interviews mm-hmm. and even post it online.
Right.
Let alone cut up pieces specifically and send them to blogs with like recaps. Like, hey, today I interviewed so-and-so.
Yes.
So like how you're seeing like the Breakfast Club interviews today.
Right.
That's kind of like what I was doing a long, long time ago.
Yes.
Obviously not the same reach. I'm not trying to take no credit for nothing.
But you
know,
yeah,
but I was early on stuff like that mm-hmm. on navigating social. So I had just started doing mixtapes. Me and Terrace mm-hmm. Martin had released some products. We released this project called Hear My Dear, which did really well. And it had, we had like a very early Kendrick on it. We had Snoop on it, Corrupt, even Charlie Wilson, mm-hmm. lot of dope talent. And then we released a second project called the Sex EP. Mm. And for those not familiar, though, I know many of you are.
I feel like I remember, I'm sorry to remember this.
Terrace is, he's a really, really dope producer and artist. A lot of infusion of jazz instrumentation meets hip hop, right? He's fire. He's produced some of your favorite music. We did this project called the Sex EP. My boy, Rhett One.
Oh, I remember this.
Designed the cover of it, right?
Yes, I remember this now.
The cover of it was two breasts in purple, and it said the Sex EP, Devi Dev, Terrace Martin.
Yes.
And unbeknownst to me, it was an image of Kim Kardashian.
Yes, I remember this now.
Her breasts. From her W Mag shoot, right? So this is when the lines were really blurred.
Yes.
Like we didn't have the same type of content restrictions as we do now. Right. So it's
it
like
was just social media was new, so there were no rules.
New. So if it was like a free project, you didn't have to worry about getting songs cleared mm-hmm. Or samples cleared, and you didn't really have to worry about photographs or attributing credit or anything like that, right? So I remember Kim tried to sue me. I've never told this story before. So basically, she somehow, what I found out later was one of my friends loved the project, was playing the project, was friends with someone in her life. I think it was her brother. He saw it and was like, hey, I know whose boobs these are. Like, and then took our mixtape back, you know, to Calabasas. And and then I got sent from Kris Jenner a cease and desist.
Oh my God.
About this mixtape. It ended up great for us. But what I loved was I had sent you the project because of that cease and desist letter, we had to pull the project just to be safe. And we re-released it as the Sex EP, Cease and Desist. And we used somebody else's breasts as the cover. And we put, like, you know, our cease and desist into the project, right? Great marketing. But I had hit you up on, like, my blast list just in the hopes of, you know, posting the project, right? Obviously, I knew it probably wasn't gonna be material for you. But I figured, like, hey, you know, I want her to be in the, you know, in the loop of stuff that I'm working on. So you did me such a solid, because I remember you said, hey, girl, so we don't post mixtapes on TMZ, but I'm gonna turn this into a story because we're gonna talk about this cease and desist. Mm-hmm. And you ended up featuring our mixtape on TMZ TV. Yeah. Like, you did a whole segment about it. You're like, my girl Debbie Dev and Kim Kardashian sent her this letter. Yeah. And, you know, and it ended up really helping us with the project, got us great exposure.
Yes.
And I was like, yo, word to Nina for giving us that look.
I had to be creative back then because, you know, when I started there, I didn't have any contacts. I didn't know anybody in LA. I didn't start there with like a Rolodex, you know? And so I was like, I'm gonna just have to build this. And there were, Harvey had rules. We weren't to report on pregnancies. We weren't to report on weddings, engagements, no mixtapes, no music really, unless it was like suing. So often people, initially, a lot of the people I met in entertainment were Black, but a lot of them were in music. And I was like, well, damn, like, I have all these music contacts. I need more news contacts. But how can I, like, use this to like, get stories about, like, Black people out there?
Yeah.
So that's why I was trying to find different angles of stuff where I was like, I could cheat this and make it something else. But I'm going to mention your thing, you know?
Yeah,
so that's kind of what
process.
I would have to do. Like, I'm going to mention you, you know? People might come for you, but, you know? But it was, I actually remember that story. I remember writing that.
That is so funny. Yo, so I've been asking Nina to come on the show forever. Instant response was yes, but finding time in her schedule has been crazy.
It's annoying. I feel like such a horrible friend because I feel like I have not mastered how to manage my time outside of work. I can manage work time perfectly. I can squeeze 3 jobs in one day and shoots. It's really difficult for me to manage my friendships with my work schedule. And being in a relationship, it's just a little overwhelming. So I am just trying to always apologize to my friends about like my lack of availability or like choosing to sleep over certain things. I feel very guilty lately.
But what do I say to you every time on text? I'm always like, colon, no pressure.
Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, I don't feel it from you. It's from my own internal things.
Yeah.
There are some friends who guilt me more, way more. Like, you're one of those friends I know if I didn't even see you for 6 months, we would just get back to where we are. You wouldn't judge me. You would just be more like, what's going on? Like, have you been?
Yeah.
But there are certain people who definitely, okay, so I guess we're starting this already.
Oh, come on.
I have been struggling in my friendships and this isn't something I've actually talked about, but I have been struggling in my friendships as a woman in her 30s I live with my boyfriend. We're in a home. We have a dog. We have this life that we're building together, working like 3 shows minimum, because sometimes I guest on other shows like Steve Harvey or Wendy Williams, where I'm flying out of town to do those shows. So guesting on shows, and then solidified 2 shows with E, and then also several times a year filming the Love and Hip Hop reunions.
Yeah.
It's very overwhelming for
which
all these
take
productions.
Which huge chunks of your time.
Yes, which God is good. So thank you for these blessings. But what people don't tell you is like you managing your relationships outside of like your own with work are very, it's an art that I have not mastered. And I'm not sure a lot of people have, because most successful people I find don't have a ton of friends. They have like a core group, family, and that's kind of it. And as I've gotten older, I've found that a lot of friends that are not in the business, because my friends in the business seem to have a little bit more of an understanding.
Yeah.
But my friends outside of entertainment don't have the capacity to understand kind of pouring your blood, sweat, and tears into something 24/7. And not that their jobs don't require that, but they have those boundaries, or they, you know, I have friends who are, you know, in work for the city that, you know, they do their holidays, their 9-to-5s, and that's how they're fulfilled, and they have their families, and that's it.
Your busy is different than that busy.
Yes.
Not better than or less than, it just looks different. It's funny that you say that, because earlier today, my girl Jazz Fly had put this on her story. She said, anybody that says,
I saw this,
you make time for, you know, excuse me, what you want to make time for, blah, blah, blah. She said they've never actually been busy.
Yes.
Because there has been legit things that I want nothing more than with my whole soul to have time to do, or people that to have time to see. And it's just, you're just a human. It's just not possible.
And I think especially when you're in media and you're, you know, doing something like this, where you're doing a podcast and giving to people, or for me, I often am, you know, I'm not an actor. So I'm giving myself every time I get on set my opinions, but I'm also, you know, giving 100% of my energy to be 100% authentic.
Yeah.
When you're off, you're decompressing. Mm-hmm. So when you have those moments to decompress, you don't necessarily want to be surrounded by people, because yeah. it's very hard to like give all of your energy to something and then just go give it to other people.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need those moments to recharge. And now that I'm in a home with like a pool, sometimes I just go and I sit out there and I'm reading, or I just don't want to go anywhere. Yeah. Like I was thinking to myself, like, am I having like a social anxiety? Because I just haven't wanted to go anywhere lately.
You're protecting your magic.
I think that's what it is, because
trademarked
I was like,
by Fadia. But yeah, you're protecting your magic.
Yeah. I think it's just been, I haven't had this much work in my career where I'm at right now. Normally I'm managing one show. So over the last couple of years, it's grown. Mm. And with that growth, I haven't quite learned how to manage my social relationships, and they've become more important to me. So I've paid more attention to like who reaches out to me mm-hmm. or who checks on me. Mm-hmm. And my energy has shifted towards the people who don't do that. So I'm not necessarily spending a lot of time with, you know, I was like the brunch queen like 5 years ago. Remember, I was planning brunches every weekend.
Epic brunches, listen.
Like a group of women, like it was great.
Yeah.
But I often found that a lot of the people that were coming to these brunches would never reach out to me. It was always me reaching out, me trying to maintain this level of, you know, I guess like, you know, a level of the relationship out in society that I didn't feel like was reciprocated.
And that's really
to
a thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I found? Not only do we have to extend grace to our friendships, we have to allow our friendships to evolve into the age brackets that we're in.
1,000%.
You know, like the thing is, life shifts, life changes. And I think people that are not choosing growth and not expanding in their personal lives, they're the hit dogs that holler when things change for other people.
Yes.
And for them, we just have to still send them love and wish them, growth and the best. But we can't take that on and take it personally. Yeah. If they're upset, if even if they're emotional because of it, it's not our responsibility or job to fix it. We have to focus on ourselves.
I think that's something that I had to learn how to do because a lot of times I was hurt by it, and like I wasn't that send love person. I was like, forget them.
You
know? I think I had to have conversations with you to get me more centered, because it hurt my feelings. And then I realized I was hurting people's feelings and not knowing it. Mm. You know, my own cousin, I had a conversation with, like, my cousin lives in another state. We were very close for a really long time. But my cousin got married at 18 and had 3 children and never quite got to live her dream. She, you know, did a lot. Her husband was in the military. She traveled. And she's probably going to hate that I'm telling this story, but I love her. But she traveled with him for many years, and just his goals kind of, she had to live with his goals for a while. And she went to school online and she pursued her degree and she did things for her. But I think her family, especially so young, took a precedent over her life. So now that she's, you know, her kids are about to either in college or graduated, she's still very young in her early 40s. I think her expectation of our relationship was going to be different. But when she was coming out of that season, I was kind of coming into getting into a long-term relationship, solidifying my career.
Yeah.
So I think the relationship she thought she would have with me once she got to this place was different. But for me, I'm like, well, look, you moved away when we were young. You traveled the world, you know, with your man. Like, I didn't say anything about you moving to Germany or you pursuing your life. So for me, I felt the expectation from her to me when she felt I couldn't reciprocate in the way that she needed. I felt it was a little unfair because we were just at different stages.
Well, it's kind of like the idea that you can't judge people based on who you are. You have to judge them based on who they are.
Right.
You know, we have to be really realistic about the rules of engagement of the people that we have relationships with in our lives. You know, like you're one of them, right? And I have other friends like this, like, I'm at a season in my life where things are moving at a different beat because I just had a child.
Right.
You know what I mean? So my days look completely different than they used to. And the type of free time I have is at different hours.
Even
than
today,
used to be.
Meeting our time, you were like, are you coming at this time or this time? Because I need to know for this baby. And it's like, yeah, you know, before where you might have been like, come anytime. You gotta set a boundary.
Nina texted me. She was like, I'll be there at 11. And I was like, is it 11:11?
She did.
Or is it 11:30:12? Just let me know. Because that means I can give the baby a bottle.
Right. But that's what you, like, that's an adjustment that, yeah, like, you have to do. That 30 minutes makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And it's like, and I think the older we get, the more responsibility we have, the more we value those 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know? And I think you don't want to waste it doing anything that's not important to you or serving you. Oh
my God, that is my biggest issue with people in my life who run late. I find running late to be, as adults, one of the most disrespectful mm-hmm. things you can do to another person. Mm-hmm. Running late happens, especially if, like us, you live in LA, because traffic is nuts.
Yes.
But it's a matter of, like, how you finesse running late. Like, yeah, don't tell me, if we're meeting at 12, don't hit me at 12:05 yes. to say running late. You hit me at 11 o'clock to tell me running late, because 100%. Then I might not want to get on the road yet.
Exactly.
Or I could say, you know what, since they're running 15, 30 minutes behind, I needed to make this call anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, allow me to maximize my time right. as I see fit, instead of using it to check my watch
right.
and look around the room.
Yeah, well, it's like, just, I think, you know, we're in this space, I think, where when we met each other, we were in our 20s
yeah.
and we were in LA and we were living this life and going out. And now, you know, we're in our 30s and we're growing. You just had a baby. And I think it just, life just kind of adjusts you.
Yeah.
And it's hard and different to, like, you're like, dang, this is really my life now. And yeah. so people don't understand, like, if it's hard for them, imagine how hard it is for us to, like, have these different responsibilities
so
on us, and trying to articulate that to the people that you love, who are used to you being one way and can't accept that the things you used to do, you can't do anymore.
The bigger illustration of that type of scenario too is that sometimes we just grow at different rates,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, even if it didn't show up right now as a manifestation of people feeling a way about the way you use your time, they're at a stunted level of growth, mm-hmm. which is not a judgment, it just is. And so that yeah. would have shown up in other ways too, even if you had all the time. You know, sometimes it's just this, like, subconscious battle of, I know I haven't grown, or I'm not growing, that person has, I'm triggered.
Yes.
You know?
I think so. I think a lot of it is projection.
Yeah.
Because I have friends who are very understanding, who are just like, okay, girl, I'll see you when I see you. I'm rooting for you. They retweet my projects or post my stuff, and it's like I saw them yesterday. And then I have other friends who feel a way about not seeing me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, well, I don't feel like this friendship is a priority for you anymore.
Oh God, come on, guys.
And I've had that. I recently just had this conversation actually with a friend
yeah.
who is not a social media user. And everybody who uses Twitter knows you get 240 characters to surmise a story.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you don't give all the minute details. You just kind of, especially if you're trying to empower other people, which I feel like I use my Twitter to help empower other people who are in my position and to talk about Game of Thrones. So, like,
yeah,
I feel
yeah.
like, you know, it's two uses here, you know, news gathering and then just kind of talking about spirituality or, like,
yeah.
you know, connections or what I may have gone through, because I made so many mistakes, just kind of telling people the human side of this entertainment business. And I had someone who I get, they're not on Twitter, but they sent me a screen grab of a tweet of mine. And said they felt a way about it because I said I didn't have any friends in LA when I first moved here. And they were my friend. So they felt a way and didn't talk to me for months. And I didn't even know that they felt a way. And my first, and mind you, we're in our 30s. Like, we're, this to me is a little bit of a curious conversation to be having.
Yeah, we should be a little bit more mature.
Because the first thing I would do if you tweeted something that I felt a way about, which I doubt would ever happen, but, like, I would just call you or text
right,
you and just
right.
be like, but even the act of that makes me feel paranoid. Like, I'm just
yeah.
like, this, it just, to me, to think that this is about you. And it, and literally it was a thread trying to, a girl had reached out to me on Twitter saying that she felt alone in LA, saying that, you know, she was out here, she was hustling, she didn't know, like, she didn't have any friends and she was frustrated. And so I did this thread in response to that and basically saying, like, look, sometimes not having friends can be a blessing, because when I first moved here, and I still stand by what I said, when I first
yeah.
moved here, I knew three people from college and they were not available to me the first couple of years that I was here. I knew them, but these were not people I was seeing all the time. They were, this was when MySpace was big. That lets you know when it was. They were having parties and posting on MySpace.
Top eight.
Okay, exactly. I wasn't invited. And we were in our 20s and figuring life out. They didn't owe it to me to like embrace me and take me everywhere, but they didn't. I was in the Valley. They were all the way in Inglewood. And there were just things I wasn't invited to. I felt very alone my first couple of years in LA. And I'm allowed to tell my story.
Yeah.
And because of that, though, because I wasn't in my 20s and distracted by LA, I was able to focus on work. I had landed the job at TMZ. And it allowed me to work weekends, holidays. It allowed me to focus because I wasn't being invited anywhere. Mm-hmm. It allowed me to use that like empty space and fill it with work, right, and make connections and network and climb. And that's why I was able to. And in the tweet, I basically said, in a summary, was like, when I first moved to LA, I didn't have any friends. And instead of looking at it as rejection, I looked at it as God trying to show me something else. And I use that space to fill it with productive things. And sometimes you don't understand God's plan until hindsight. And she took that personally instead of seeing the message that I was trying to convey. And kind of it ended our friendship for the most part. And it was sad to me that a tweet could end our friendship, but I know that it's not about me.
No.
And I still, and you know, and even in the conversation, it was still filled with love from my end as far as, look, I love you, this, but I'm allowed to speak my truth. And the thing is, when you're a public figure, you are allowed to talk about things that other people may not talk about on a big space. So mm-hmm. I can understand people feeling a way about that. But you know, even when you get older, you think this kind of stuff is going to be relegated to your 20s, and it's not. People feel a way about everything you do for the rest of your life.
I know some 70-year-olds that have beef, and I'd be like, how are you and Mildred fighting like this?
It's
like
the biggest facade that we've been sold, that you mature out of certain things.
Well, yeah, that it's all about personal growth, because it's like, I know people have, like, you may have someone in your life that it's like, wait, we had so much in common in high school, but mm-hmm. it seems like they haven't changed since high school, mm-hmm. but I'm so different.
Right.
And now you seem light years apart. Like, age... Yeah. has nothing to do with it 100%. If you don't stay open and you don't pursue growth. You will have the exact same mentality, mm-hmm. the exact same emotional intelligence as a 15-year-old, yes. as you did when you were 15, mm-hmm. if you didn't challenge yourself or rise to the occasion in other aspects of your life, even when you are 75.
I think my dad is like 66 now, and he has his friend. And the friend has always been this crazy guy who, you know, back in the day, because my dad is from LA, back in the day when he was in his 20s, this guy was, you know, pulling, you know, doing a lot of illegal things, yeah. right? He was just in the streets.
Moving weight.
He's still in the streets. He literally called my dad last week at the border and was like, can you help me? Because I lost everything. I need help to get across. Like, his life is still a crazy mess. He has like 8 kids all over the place. And he's in his 60s now doing the same thing. And my dad is like, you better get on the mega bus. Like, I have a family.
My dad is like,
I am retired. You've been doing this since we were in our 20s. Like, aren't you exhausted? And it's like, he was telling me the story, and it was a funny story. But I couldn't believe how much his friend had not grown. So yeah. he was literally the same man, still irresponsible, still no relationship with most of his children, still calling my dad out the blue for help like he did when they were in their 20s. It's one of the reasons my parents moved to the Bay Area instead of raising me in LA, because all of my dad was surrounded by was his friends who were, you know, drinking, drugging, breaking the law. And my mom was like, I don't want to raise our kids in this type of environment. And I don't feel like you're strong enough to tell these guys no when they need help. We're going up north. And they ended up moving to the Bay because my mom was like, it's cheaper housing and no drama.
Yeah.
And he said in hindsight, like at the time he fought tooth and nail, but my dad did say my mom saved him because he was kind of in these streets.
As women do. Listen.
And they still together, child. So.
And it's so funny because it's like, to be alive, to be a human on this earth, age and time are guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Growth is not.
Mm-mm.
You know, Mm-mm. age and time are absolutely guaranteed to us. Yeah. That factor will never change.
Mm-hmm.
But growth is fully dependent on us. The and quality of our life fully dependent on us.
And it's been, I would say these last 2 years have been very sobering and heartbreaking at the same time.
Mm.
I've lost some friendships that I still deeply care about those people. But I've learned that you can't grow with everybody. And sometimes you kind of phase out of friendships and relationships with no intention to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
You find yourself.
And
you,
no actual beef. No, like, no we didn't have some type of big blow up. No. We just kind of eased away from
sometimes
each other.
It would be easier for me to just be able to cuss somebody out.
It'll have closure and it'll have a definite reason.
Exactly.
You'll say, we're not friends because of.
I have a couple of friendships where I'm like, we just stopped speaking.
Yeah.
And there's no beef. Like, we didn't unfollow each other. We still like each other's photos. And I still wish nothing but the best for them. And somewhere along the way, it just shifted. And I think, also in the past, my priority has always been to fix that. Mm-hmm. In the past, my priority has always been to be cool with everybody, make sure I'm on, you know, good standing. And if something is wrong, I got to fix the problem. But I no longer have the energy for that. And so if it doesn't seem like it's reciprocated.
Well, it's not even about the energy. You know what it is? I think sometimes, and you are kind of like blissfully moving into this space. Mm-hmm. It's just the accepting of what is.
Yeah.
And that being enough and that being okay.
It's so funny because it made me so sad at first. Not sad in the sense that I necessarily wanted to maintain the friendship, but I've always just been one of those people that, like, even when celeb couples break up, I'm sad. I'm like, oh, I really love them together. Like, I've always just had a problem with people leaving each other's lives, even if I wasn't involved. Like, I always hated to see breakups. I've always hated, and I never could understand, like, seeing somebody together for a long time and then they just separate and they start dating other people. Yeah. I wouldn't even be ready to move on.
But why can't you fix it?
Right.
Why can't you come to some commonality?
I've always just wanted that for other people. Mm. So for myself, it was initially difficult, and now it's easy breezy, but I've always had a little bit of separation anxiety with that for others and for myself, and I don't really know why. But as I've gotten older, I almost had like a emotional, maybe mental even, breakdown earlier this year. I had a health scare. I lost my grandmother. I had the month of February, I think I worked like one day. I had one day off in the whole month. I worked like every job I had in February plus award season. And I was going through like just major turmoil. And I just was like, I finally had to have a talk with myself because I was going to lose it. Like I was going in between doctor's appointments and work. And I was like, people were texting me about this innocuous stuff. And I was like, I finally had to make a decision that I could no longer give my energy to things that weren't serving me for real, for real. Because sometimes I think people say that and they don't really mean it. Yeah. But it felt like it was either me or them. And I had to just say to people in text, I can't deal with this right now. I can't help you with this right now. I am overwhelmed. This is not in a negative way, but I just can't give this to you right now. I had to keep myself afloat. Mm. And there were a lot of people who understood and there were a lot of people who didn't. And that was okay. But there was a point where it was like a breaking point where it was like, I have to choose myself, my health, my peace, my wellness. And I had to start doing things. And in my relationship as well, I had to start setting boundaries for everybody because it was killing me. It was trying to please everybody, keep everybody cool, pay my bills, go to work. My health was suffering. It was just like enough already. And I never realized where I was at until I lost some family members. And that was like that kind of final stress on top of everything. I didn't realize how close I had been teetering for so long.
How beautiful though. Like, I know as you're looking back on it, you're like, ooh, February.
It was like the worst month of my life, honestly.
But it was like the freedom that you needed too, right?
And maybe 1,000%.
And I'm a big, big believer. That, you know, God only comes to you through pain sometimes when we're not listening, you know, like he'll whisper to you. And if you, la da da,
he'll start knocking on that door, child.
Then he'll punch you in the face.
Yes.
God stays catching fades with me.
And you think it's all going to come together. Like it was like, my career is going so well. How can all these things be happening? Like you in your idealistic young mind, you think if you have the perfect job, your life will be perfect. You don't realize, first of all, you don't realize how much you got to work.
Yeah.
Nobody tells you how much sleep you don't get.
Yeah.
People don't tell you how hard you have to work to stay where you are. Because the journey and the things when I hear people speak is always about getting there. We don't hear a lot about people saying what you got to do to stay there. And it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of...
And it really brings a lot of reckoning to you. Because actually, it's funny. Me and Nicole Kane from XO Nicole, we were having this conversation all weekend about how we had to become really realistic with ourselves about what we really wanted our day-to-day life to look like and success to look like.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we take on is the pressure of other people's expectations of us, even in the best way, even 1,000%. Fans, right? Because like you have fans that are like, oh my God,
right,
queen, you are
I saw Nicole's post and she was like, don't ask me where my abs are. Because a lot of people now see her body and they're like, she probably feels like they have this expectation of how she's supposed to look.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, this is still my journey, guys.
Right.
You know, like this is still my choice. And she said something really profound to me. She was talking about how she had realized that she wants to have impact, but she doesn't care if it makes her a billionaire.
Mm.
And so she doesn't want to take on the lifestyle and pressure as if she's looking to make $1 billion because that at this moment in her life is not what's important to her.
Yeah.
And I think like for this year, a big shift for me came because for so long, my self-worth was tied to my productivity.
Mm-hmm.
How productive am I being?
Yes.
That's my value.
Yes.
You know, and I've been in transition out of that for many years now, just as I've been making more breakthroughs about myself. But I heard this quote at the top of the year and I said, that's my intention for the year.
Mm.
And it was, don't build a life around your career, build a career around your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, and that's not everybody's desire,
right?
You know, but I know, okay, what's really important to me? My peace, having time to grow, having time to share my gifts and my purpose in the way that I feel is going to impact in the way that I want to.
Yeah.
And at this moment, that doesn't include going viral. That doesn't include like, which there's nothing wrong with those things.
Right.
It's just not for the long-term vision that I see for myself that other people don't know about and couldn't comprehend. The things that are on their goal list for me are far different than what's on my goal list for me.
And that's important to know. I think, when I was in transition from my relationship, Dev's just snapped the hell out of her neck. Y'all thought she was taking herself out. You did a little John Wick move just now.
If you know me, you know I am always popping my back and neck.
She's crazy. Oh, child. I forgot what I was saying. I think someone asked me when I was on a break from my boyfriend, like, what do you want in a relationship? And I didn't know. And I was like, damn, how can I demand anything when I don't know? So I took like a year to like figure out what I wanted in life. And I still feel like I'm not quite there yet career-wise, like, cause it's always changing for me and I'm very hard on myself. And that's something I'm learning about. But I think it's important to know like what, like for me, how I was telling you how just laying in my backyard, like that's peace to me. I feel like I might have phased out of going out and
and that's the part that we, girl, can I just say for a second, we put so much pressure on ourselves about that because especially like for people like us that are on more of the top end of the millennial curve, we remember life a little before, a little after.
Yeah.
We kind of have one foot in the way the old regime operated and then in the way the new regime operates.
1,000%.
And also our 20s were so tied, and you know, I'm speaking specifically to us because we came up in our 20s. We were in LA. We were at a lot of events. We were doing a lot of things. And that's the way it's supposed to look in your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, by the time you make it to your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, you are in a different space with your career. So the need to be out every night is not there.
You don't need to.
But we don't take time to sit in that. And we think, oh my God, if I'm not out every night, then I'm falling off.
Yep.
I'm missing out. I have FOMO. Oh, people are going to think I'm irrelevant because I wasn't here. No, all of that stuff was necessary and fulfilling in a different phase of my life. It's not actually necessary to what I'm building in this moment.
1,000%.
It's also not what I want in this moment. Mm-hmm. And listen, the second you hit 30, the way you sleep, the way your sleep is set up is a little different.
And people say it and you think when you're in your 20s, you think it's BS. You're like, my body isn't going to change.
Yeah.
And then it's literally 12:05 on the clock on your birthday and you feel a little crick, you feel a little something, yeah. It's different. Your metabolism slows down. Like, you need your sleep more. It has to be like your best friend. You have to regulate a lot more, and it's difficult to navigate because in your mind, you're still in your 20s.
Yeah.
And you're like, I can do this. I did it before. You think because you've always done it that way,
yeah,
you can keep sustaining it. And your body is like, no, you cannot.
And you're not allowing yourself the grace to evolve into whatever the now is.
That's so true.
You know, so I don't know if I've told you this story. I'm gonna tell you, you're gonna get hot, but
oh boy.
Also, what I'm really noticing a lot in my life right now is how much I don't subscribe to the societal expectations placed on women.
Yes.
I think we are always, if we allow society to tell our tales and if we allow society to direct us, we're always going to be in a place of lack and deficit.
Yeah.
You know, because on one end, it's like, if you're super career driven, if you're killing it, if you're doing all this great stuff, mm-hmm. then you're that's minimized.
Right.
And people will instead comment, oh, well, you ain't got no man. Mm-hmm. Or, well, why don't you have a baby? Oh, you don't want a baby? Something's wrong right. with you. What right. kind of woman doesn't want a baby?
Right.
right? Then if you have a child or you have a family, then it's like, yeah, she has that, but what else does she have going
yes,
on?
Yes.
Oh, but she's not doing X,
it's
Y, and
always
Z. She's
something.
Not a boss.
Yeah.
It's like, and there's no winning, right? When
right.
when you subscribe to those type of projections,
right.
like the expectations for us
yeah.
are so high. The expectations for men are bottom level mediocre.
100%.
And as soon as I figured that out, I said, oh, I'm not putting myself through this
yeah.
stress.
Yeah.
I'm going by the beat of my yeah. own drum. But I have this experience that I found out about like last year. And it was just to me further confirmation that I am living the life that feels good to me.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of life that matters to me above all else. When I was this former boss I used to have, he would always, you know, when I'd be at work killing it, excelling, he would always focus in on, well, you're married, so when are you going to have a child? Like, you really need to have a baby. First of all, you're my boss. Why are you
right.
talking to me
why
about
are you
this
giving
at work?
Me,
like,
yeah.
why are we discussing my womb at
yeah,
work?
Right.
But he would always have, you know, his 2 cents about it and how much I needed to have a child and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, yeah, you know, when I'm ready, I will. I always knew, even after getting married, that I wanted to wait 5 to 7 years mm-hmm. before I had a child.
Mm-hmm.
Always knew I didn't want to have kids till I at minimum hit 30.
Right.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
So I did things in the exact time frame that I wanted to do
mm-hmm.
them. I ran into this person when I was 9 months pregnant, mm-hmm. right? I was walking around the Grove and I ran into this person and I was so excited to see him
mm-hmm.
because I have great relationships with probably 85 to 90% of
yeah.
anyone that I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
And people matter to me. You mm-hmm. know, the relationships that I build, especially when it's a day in and day out type of thing, we're investing in each other's lives. They matter to me. So when I saw him, I was so excited. I was
right.
like, hey, how are you? And, you know, he was just like, oh, hi, good to see you. Hadn't seen me. I was 9 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple people that work at that place
mm-hmm.
let me know in the preceding months that when he got back home
mm-hmm.
and was in a staff meeting with everyone that I had worked with for
mm-hmm.
many years and with a lot of the people that I had personally hired, in the meeting he said, oh yeah, I ran into Debbie. She's so pregnant. God, I feel so bad for her. She's not doing anything with her life.
What?
In a meeting, in a professional meeting
oh,
with my former coworkers
oh my God.
And people that I had hired.
You're right, I am hot.
Girl. And I was so, and I remember when the first person told me that story and related to me, like a tear fell out of my eye because I felt so disrespected by someone that I respected.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like, number one, you don't know anything about anything that I'm working on
yeah.
because I no longer subscribe to what you find to be
right.
your calling, or I no longer care to have the day-to-day rat race that you're still
mm-hmm.
locked into, or because maybe the vision of for my life and myself has expanded in a way that you don't understand because you are a man 20 years older than me.
Right.
You would tell a room full of people that me being pregnant is me not knowing what I want to do
when
with
you were
my
pushing
life?
Me towards that.
Yes. Yeah,
when
so
I was
I'm
under
like,
you.
And then you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. As a woman, you can't win.
Right.
And also it's like, you obviously clearly don't know me.
Right.
Or don't know, like,
that's the most hurtful thing, I think, when you hear something like that. Almost not that the person said it, that it's someone who you thought knew you.
Yeah.
Who is, they might as well be a stranger.
Like, oh, I thought you got me.
Right.
But this whole time you're didn't. This whole time you have not been able to fully compute
right.
the fullness of who right. I actually
and
am.
And you see how one dimensional that person is.
How one dimensional, yeah.
And then you're like, well, damn, was my meter off? But, you know, it's like, sometimes I feel like people regress as well. So I feel like that's almost a projection that he's in the same space. He's in yeah. the same place.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. Yeah.
Because that has to be about him and not about you. And it's, and I was wondering, I was actually having this conversation. This is a little off topic, but I was having this conversation with my best friend because I was saying, you know, in my career, it's normal for me to call a spade a spade, but I don't feel like I've ever been a mean person. Like you'll never find anything of me saying this person is fat. This person is ugly. This person is stupid. Like, I don't talk like that. And I'm not around anybody who talks like
yeah.
that. You and I have never had a conversation ever where you've called someone out in a nasty way about the way that they look or something so surface.
Yeah.
And I often feel like there are some people who just kind of stay in this small box of projection. Like,
yeah.
I believe anybody who talks the way that he talked, or anybody who calls someone ugly, or anyone who can say, oh, well, they're just fat. Like, people who talk like that, to me, I've never heard them say it and believed what they were saying about the other person. And 100% made me look at them and wonder what was going on with them to make them even say something like that. And I'm sure everybody at that meeting took that same thing, which is why I got back to you.
Yeah.
Because it's such a one-dimensional way of thinking. It makes yeah. you look so
every person that
crazy.
I talked to about that was just like.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
First of all, clearly yeah. he doesn't know you.
But do
like,
you even
he's
like
a mess? Like, who would say that?
Right.
And who would say that in front of people?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
It's just, I just feel like it's so one note. I remember when I first started at TMZ, there was this copy editor that kind of took me under his wing, because when I first started there, I was just writing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, TMZ was really quirky. It was, we were breaking stories, but it hadn't quite hit, like we hadn't broken the Michael Jackson death. Like it was still kind of a quirky site. And so we would write about like the celeb videos. And I think it was like Brody Jenner or something like that. And I was calling him like a rich kid or something. And I remember the writer pulling me aside and being like, I know you're not this one note. Like, I know there are so many funny things you could say about this. And yeah, he's rich. We know that. Like, what else? And it really blew me away because wow. He was like, it's so easy to call someone fat or ugly or, oh, they look dirty. Or, you know, he's like, it's all so one note. Like, if you want to be funny, be funny. And if you can't be funny, then just write the story straight. And I was like, oh, shoot. Like, and it really checked me. And I'm glad it was in my 20s. And I wanted to take that outside of work and make sure that that's how I applied it in my life. And I think because I was that way, I only attracted people who were similar. I thank God that I've never ended a friendship because somebody was just a mean, nasty person. Mm-hmm. It's been because of our personal differences. But I would never say any of those people are mean, nasty people. Something like what he did is just so nasty and mean and dark.
Yeah.
Especially to even say that about a pregnant woman just irks me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, you wonder like,
and my pregnancy was so difficult.
Yeah.
Like, what he didn't even see is like, you seeing me 65 pounds heavier than my norm.
Right.
Right. It was such a struggle mm-hmm. for me to get out of bed that day. Yeah. Like I was battling depression during my pregnancy. A lot of it obviously is chemical, and a lot of it was because I was nauseous 24/7, throwing up 24/7 for 10 months.
Yeah.
When you feel that way, it's so hard to have joy in your life.
Yeah.
Like imagine when you normally get a cold or a sick or when you have food poisoning.
Right.
You feel like crap the whole day. You're not going to run out and frolic and do all these things, right? You're not feeling like your best self. Well, when you feel like that every day for close to a year, you know, like just
that takes
being
a
able,
mental toll.
It took such a psychological toll on me. Me even being able to get out of the house that day into the sunshine, right? To walk, to experience, to like, it was so hard for me. Mm-hmm. I threw up on the way there in the car, you know? And so then it's just, I think it's also just such people, as we've talked about through this whole show, their levels of projection, right? Mm-hmm. Like it also might've just been, he felt a kind of way because I quit.
Yeah.
You know, because I left that job, though I thought I left on good terms, apparently, but apparently maybe not. But you know, I had left because I wanted to pursue other things that were important to me in my life. And I wanted to move back home to Los Angeles, you know? But yeah, hearing that, and I quickly let go of it, but in that afternoon, it definitely made me sad.
It made
me sad that someone I respected would see something that was both a very beautiful and challenging time in my life, me carrying my son.
How would you not see the beauty in that? And then also, it just blows my mind because this
and
person
then to
pushed
disregard
you.
Disregard me in that way.
They were pushing you to do it.
You talking to me every day about my damn womb.
And then when I do it, it's and so that's how you know that it was never about you having the baby.
And there's also no satisfying people like that, right? Because anyone like that, any way that anybody sees you is fully based on how they view themselves and 100%. How they view the world, the good and the bad. 100%. And I tell people this all the time, like when I have people like, oh, Debbie, like you have so much peace or you have light. I love you. It's like, yeah, you feel that way about me because you also see what's inside of you.
Yeah.
And I'm giving you permission to tap into that.
But not everybody, like I've seen you deal with trolls online.
Yeah.
And I know, especially like when Dwayne was leaving and going to a different team, there were a lot of people who were trolling you.
Yeah.
And you handled that with a lot of grace and you let the chopper go a couple times, which was warranted, which was very warranted because there's a lot of racists up in these comments sometimes.
Yeah.
And I remember people were making all kinds of crazy comments. And
also, please know I'm always from LA.
Okay. LA. Right. Deepak, but also have Tupac. Okay. If you see her house, you know, she got Tupac everywhere, but it was crazy. You handled it with a lot more grace than most people would, but it was just kind of like what people feel they have the right to say to you because they think they know like a caveat about your life that they get to dictate what happens in it.
Yeah, and I think it's like people's own sense of worth and their own sense of lack in their life, because for them it's like, whether I give you a compliment or I'm giving you a criticism, I'm standing a little bit taller because you responded, mm-hmm. which on a deeper soul level is just them saying, I don't feel important in my life. I don't feel seen. Even if you respond to me in a terrible way,
right.
you saw me.
Right.
I exist.
It's I just, have something. It's so true. It's why when people troll you and you respond, they say, oh, I was just kidding. Or, right. oh,
or
God,
they say like, oh, you responded. That means exactly. it's true. Or it's just, and that's been, it's going to be interesting when we look back in the history books in 50 years and social media is right. taught in schools, like yeah. the origins of it are explained. Yeah. And the mental, the psychological and emotional toll that is taken. But my rule of thumb for stuff like that is, 90% of the time, never respond
yeah.
because you don't even want to introduce your audience to whoever these people are.
I agree.
Because no one that follows you even knows this is happening yeah. to you. And then you plant the seed that you yes. get talked to in that way
yeah.
for them. The other 10% of the time though,
yeah,
I always think respond if it can be a teachable moment.
Yes.
You know, so there mm-hmm. have been some comments that, I mean, I could care less about it. You are easy block or delete right, away. I won't right. think about it at all later. Mm-hmm. But some people I have actually responded to just because I know people are watching.
Yeah.
And I want them to see how I handle a scenario right. like that. Right. Like, and so for some people, and it hasn't happened in a long time, but if I get a random like comment from someone who has an anonymous page, because that's what
always,
right? Like no pictures or mm-hmm. zero followers. You know, sometimes I've responded and just said, I'm not even trying to be like petty positive. Like I truly mean this. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that you're hurting.
Yeah.
My that's life doesn't always... feel that way. You know,
it's such
my
a
life
good response.
Does not feel that way.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine that if my life felt that way, that I would seek out someone I don't know mm-hmm. or create a fake page to
right.
say something
it's
nasty
so
to somebody. There's something wrong inside.
Yeah. yeah.
Your life is not full.
That's how you
there's
know you're mature.
There's not that much joy.
When you're
you know?
Not mad when you see it, you're more concerned.
Right. Like
baby, are you okay?
Does your insurance cover
right.
therapy?
Because you should get it. That's actually something I've struggled with.
No, you do a great job, because the other day, and I meant to grab this tweet before I saw you, but Quest, baby, life.
Yes.
but you, the other day, you had this tweet that I was like, oh, I want to frame this.
Really?
Yeah. Someone had made some comment. I wish I could fully remember it, but someone had made this comment about you. And I want to say like, it was in relation to you being curvy and being on the E Network
mm-hmm.
and the way that you responded, I said, Nina, like, slow clap, because it fully highlighted how small their mind was
yeah.
and how simple mm-hmm. their thinking was.
I think I remember what you're talking about. And I think he had said something like, I think I was standing next to Zuri Hall, who is very small.
Yes,
she's like Zuri is like a negative zero. And I think I was standing next to her, and obviously like I've got boobs and you know what I mean? Like I am a size
hips,
14
yeah.
child on TV. It looks bigger. And so I think it was someone like, you shouldn't stand next to someone that small, or it was in that vein of like, I should be embarrassed or, and it's just so funny because I don't feel that at all. And the funny thing is,
why would you feel that at all?
Like, I was just like, oh, so with retweeting it, even though he was insulting me, I retweeted it and I think
yeah.
I said something, and Lonnie Love ended up responding to it.
Mm.
And it started a conversation, which was great. But I feel like it's so funny how people want you to feel bad about who you are.
Yeah.
Like it's like this social, it's something I'm fascinated with, because I don't feel that way. I'm fascinated with people who want you to feel bad about being secure in who you are. And I wouldn't say I'm secure all the time. Like I have moments just like
you're
everybody
human.
Else,
yeah.
but I'm very confident when I'm on air. Nobody's getting with me. And that's
yep.
just the deal. I come prepared. I know my stuff.
Yeah.
It's well thought out. And I'm also encyclopedia for celebrity information as
yeah.
far, because I've been doing it for so long. So I can give you backstory. Like I am very confident when I'm on air about what I'm delivering. you may have a problem with my opinion, but you'll never have a problem getting facts from me. I'm never one of those people that gives wrong information. And so in those, in that sense, I just feel very fearless in front of the camera. And so
I love that.
For me, I would have been more offended if he was like, she don't know what she's talking about. But it's never that. I never get tweeted, I don't know what I'm talking about. It's always something, one note about a look or, you know, and people have a right to feel, you know, however they want to feel. But it warms my heart to get so many women, because listen, E! Was known for being a very white, skinny girl network for a very long time. And if they had maybe one or two black reporters, people felt like they fell in line with the traditional mold. So when E! Hired me, it was different. It was a different change. And, you know, I'm kind of a part of Black Twitter in a sense where people know me. People see me on the Love & Hip Hop reunions. They've seen me on TMZ. And now here I am at E! And I think for some people, they want to keep you in a box so they don't understand where to put you. And I love that. I love when people don't know where to put me. I think that's a
superpower.
100%. Yeah. And I can navigate in most spaces like most Black people can. Like where we all have to navigate in different spaces that we may not normally be in.
Is there a certain burden of responsibility when you're like the first?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes, you know, I used to feel that at TMZ a lot because it was a lot, it was very edgy, and I always felt like I had to be the voice of Black people. You know, this van wasn't there yet. Yeah. It was like just kind of me. And I was like, I got exhausted because I felt like I always had to speak up. So every day it was a debate. And they would gaslight me, you know, they would do things that they knew I would have to say something about. And it, and I, because if it aired and I didn't, then it was like, damn, Nina, you just sat there and let them say these things. Yeah. But I got tired of fighting every day, because it gets tiring fighting a fight every day that you know it's impossible to win. It's nobody was changing their minds there. So if I thought it was going to make a significant difference to the way we reported, then I think it would have been okay. But I was like, this is not, that's when I realized I had to leave, because I was like, oh, okay, I get it. This is a shtick for them. Like this is, let's anger everybody, rile everybody up, and then we're going to do it again tomorrow. We're going to report this. We're going to do these things the same way. And for me, that was difficult because I, like these stories really affected my community. Black people really get affected by what happens with our celebrities, because it's not just a celebrity to us. Whitney is family. Michael Jackson was family. Prince was family. So when we're talking about these people and it's being treated with such light gloves, I walked out on TMZ on Obama's inauguration day because they were making fun of Michelle's dress. I left that day. I walked out.
What?
Because I was crying in the office and we were watching the inauguration and they wanted to do, and they did it. The story's still there. They did a story. She was wearing that black and red dress in his inauguration and they thought it was ugly and they did a story about it. And I thought, this is such a monumental moment. And this woman is just such an embodiment of what Black magic is to me.
Yeah.
And this, there was cornrows in the White House and I see these little girls who are in the White House and she got her mama with her. And it was such an important moment for me and they wanted to do a story. And I just got so upset because I would fight in the newsroom. I would be like, we are not doing this. And I fought about it. And they're like, it's not that big of a deal, Nina. You're taking it too seriously. And I left and I was just like, I'm out of here, because I just felt like it didn't mean as much to them as it did to me. And I just realized that our goal was never going to be the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I had to move on, and there's no love lost in that area. Like they got to do what they got to do. It's a machine at that point. But for me, it was hurting my spirit because I wanted to be able to be at a place where if they wanted to say or do whatever, I could say it and do as much as I needed to do freely to defend my side, but also feel like it was going to make a difference.
The celebrity space can really be a lot, right? Like, especially when you have to offer up commentary, which means forming opinions, sometimes forming judgments, like a lot. It can be a lot of chaos, like the news that you're reporting. It can be both heavy or just 100%. Sometimes feel really salacious. How do you maintain the beautiful integrity that you carry yourself with and the peace that you invite into your life when your work is sometimes really dependent on hearing a lot of like cutting commentary?
Yeah. Well, for me, I made the decision, like I told you about the copy editor that I spoke to. So I made the decision early in my career not to insult people for how they looked, only for their behavior. So that was one of my rules. I only insult people for their behavior, never for how they look. If somebody came out with stains on their shirt, I wasn't going to talk about that, right? But if you came out and you were drunk and you passed out on the street and the cameras caught it, then I might say, well, this person's acting a fool. But I made the decision to only say things on air that I would say to the person's face, because I live in LA and I might run across them.
Write that down.
And I wanted to be able to defend myself, because this is the thing. Like, we have a friendship where we can be honest with each other with love.
Yeah.
If I was messing up, I know you would pull me aside and be like, girl, I love you, but you gotta get your ass together. You would do that. And I feel the same way about some of these celebs. I love some of these people. These people I may have a crush on or whatever. But a lot of people think if you report on somebody, you always have to be nice to them. You're not allowed to have any type of real feeling about it. You have to have this general like happiness for them no matter what they're doing.
Ooh, yeah.
And I always feel like I was doing disservice to the public who's screaming at the TV like, y'all don't see what I see? Like, this person acted a damn fool. I'm not allowed, you know? So for me, I was like, I'm gonna say exactly what I would say to their face in the most eloquent way possible. Sometimes funny, sometimes it's just a joke. Sometimes it's just lighthearted and just a funny joke. And we all have been able to be the butt of a joke sometimes if we were looking or acting crazy. But for me, I made the rule that I wanted to be able to say it to their face. And I wanted to be able to have ethics about like, if I wasn't on set, then it wasn't my business. So like if I was at a party and say you had an event here and you had a bunch of different celebs here, I would never take anything that happened here and talk about it on air. So what people started to notice after seeing me out in LA, and they would never have their business repeated, they would never see me talk about it on air, unless it was like an intense conversation where I would tell them, oh, I really want to talk about this. Most of the time, if it was in a conversation I felt need to go on air, they would just come in for an interview or something like that. But people would be around me and sometimes doing things that are illegal or whatever, and it would never get back to anybody. I made a choice that I was like, I'm not going to repeat anything I see when I'm not working. Now, if you're on a red carpet doing something crazy and cameras catch it, I can't protect you. But if I'm at a private event or if I'm at a party, I'm not taking any of that back, because I have my off times too. I've argued with my boyfriend in public. Like, I've had things that I don't want people to know.
For sure,
so I had to keep a line, and I always made sure that I'm more of a host now than I am a reporter, in the sense of like, I'm not calling reps and getting statements. I don't really do that anymore. But when I was, I made sure that if we were reporting a story, I always called and got their side of things. So if there was a story about a DUI, if there was a story about domestic violence, if there was a story about a break-in, or even if a story about something as small as like somebody said something about them, instead of just running the story, I would always make sure to call them. I would always make sure to either call them or their rep and let them know, hey, the story's going up. This is what we're saying. It's going up regardless. I want to give you opportunity to tell your side of the story, or at least give a statement. What do you want to do? Even if they decided not to respond, I just wanted to have fairness so that they could be able to tell their side of the story. And a lot of people wouldn't say anything, but they respected the fact that they were asked, because you would be surprised how many stories go up where people don't even call and ask for comment. It's like you wouldn't even have a story to run. I would just tell you it wasn't true. And there's so many people who appreciate, I've cultivated friendships just by calling and being like, hey, this is about to run. Just want to let you know. That's really how I think the ethic thing got instilled in me very early in my career. I had some really good people around me that were like, we don't operate like this. And my friends that are still in the business that are journalists, I tell them all the time, like, make sure you give them both sides of the story. Like, don't just run with this, because you're going to burn a lot of bridges running with a rumor. You know, it's just not ethical.
And that, like, now the lines get blurred too, because when you are a host, you're also now the celebrity too.
I guess I still don't feel that way.
But is that, you know, how do you feel? Do you feel like people apply the same rules to you that you're given when you report on celebrity?
Probably not. I always feel like my boundaries are much harder than most people's. Like, I feel like I'm old fashioned in that sense. I feel like I'm a person just likes boundaries. So I probably apply that boundary pressure more than most people. And that's okay. Like, I don't expect everybody to treat me the same way. I don't probably won't get that same respect in certain instances. I haven't been in the press a ton. Most of it is stories that people are calling me for to do an interview. I don't really get like gossip stories about me. Every now and then I'm on the Shade Room, but like for the most part, it's like normally it's for something said on camera. So it's not like my personal life or anything yeah. like that, but it's different. I remember talking to Wendy Williams and she said that she doesn't have celeb friends on purpose because she was saying that it gets hard to do your job as a host because you become biased, you know? And so that's been difficult for me too, because I genuinely meet people that may be celebs that I genuinely like, yeah. but I have to tell them I still got to do my job, and I'm gonna do it in the most respectful way possible, but I still have to be able to do my job and be who I am without you feeling offended by it. Cause sometimes even when they follow you, you don't want to retweet certain things, or, you know, like Nicki Minaj follows me and then Cardi B follows me on Instagram. And sometimes I'm like, if I post this, is somebody gonna feel away? But then I'm like, I gotta do me, right, you know? Right. So it's just like they would do them. But it's sometimes you feel weird, especially because you know you have a platform.
Yeah.
And people, you know, want something from you. But
there's so many nuances now to like yeah. the social world and the social relationships that we have. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, are you gonna see this?
Yeah.
Or even just in line of like how much of my life is going to remain personal and how do I keep it that
yeah.
way? You know, because since we've kind of have first signed up for Instagram, where it was just before this space to kind of share your personality, your personal yeah. life, just little musings, or mm-hmm. we used to post random pictures of totally. The most random things. Now it's a more curated experience, and it's more, especially for public figures, it's used as a marketing tool, totally. Not as a tool of self-expression. So it's kind of like that weird balance. Well, what do I post?
Right.
Well, do I want to post my man, or do I want to only post work things, or do I want to post, you know, it's right. just like, ugh, it's this hard thing that
it's hard to navigate.
And then the bigger following you get, it's like, well, I'm really allowing a lot of people yeah. into my life.
Yeah.
That's part of the conflict I have about whether or not I ever want to post my son on social
yeah.
media. And it's not that, I mean, obviously, you know, he's not Northwest, so I'm not posting his face because I imagine that like, oh no, the paparazzi.
Yeah.
But I'm just still kind of struggling with how am I going to navigate this space for him?
Mm-hmm.
And what is like considered too young to require consent
yeah.
and what isn't, right?
Yeah.
Because now, unlike me, everything about his life is going to be on the internet forever.
Yeah.
Until, you know, the end of time. So how do I want to introduce him to the world, and how much of him am I going to give
totally.
To the world? Because it's still his business.
Mm-hmm.
He's a baby.
Yeah.
But it's still his life.
Yeah.
It's still his business. You know what? I don't want naked pictures of him on
right.
the internet, or
totally.
Not that would happen, but you know, even what would be cute in the tub.
Right.
It's like, well, how is he going to feel about
mm-hmm.
that when that is a piece of his information he can never scrub from being online? And also just like, I kind of want to keep him for me.
Yeah. It's,
you know,
I think I don't, unless it's like Mother's Day and it's an old picture.
Yeah.
I rarely post pictures of my parents.
Yeah. I don't post any of my other family
yeah.
members on social either
yeah.
for that reason. It's just, mm-hmm. you're inviting into their lives.
I can
something
take
they
it,
didn't sign
you know?
Up for.
Like, I can take it. I signed up for it. People troll me. That's fine. But you know, like, I have a mom who was sick. Like my dad is, you know, I just, my sister, like I am still me. I'm still, you know, from the Bay, and there's always going to be a biting part of me. Like, that has been my hardest part with this whole transition, is that the way you want to clap back, you can't clap back because
yeah.
you could lose your damn job.
Right, right,
so
right.
So I have really worked since 2007 to try to just control my mouth, right? And it's sometimes hard because people really, really say things to you they would never say to you in person. And people can get really nasty. Like,
oh yeah, they think there's no consequence.
Right. They think there's no consequence to it. And so sometimes I understand those celebs that have a million followers and they retweet the person's insult. And then everybody says, well, they're getting doxxed and they're doing this. But it's like, even though I have a million followers, we're both still human beings. Like, I'm allowed to feel emotion. And there's a part of you that does kind of have to turn off with these trolls.
Yeah.
I get trolled a lot for Love and Hip Hop. So for my stuff with E and when I did stuff with Access.
Very different audiences.
Very different audience. They would more come at me for my opinion. So it's like, I disagree with you about this. That's fine. But like with Love and Hip Hop, that audience is more visceral and obviously fueled by a lot of drama. And really, I have nothing to do with the show. Like, I have nothing to do with the show. I literally get emailed the episodes. I watch the episodes on my own in addition to all my other work. And I come in, I cultivate these questions with production, and I do an interview. That's a reunion. And then I go and I leave. And people are very intense about the show. And it's VH1's highest rated series, and it does really well. But people are very invested in these other people's lives. And they hold you personally accountable if they don't feel that you ask what they would ask. Or, you know, everybody thinks they can be a host. Everybody thinks they can do these things until it's time to do it. And there's also, but people don't understand that this is not just like as easy as like me and you sitting down. This is a production. So it's
you're balancing the energy of like 15 to 20
people at who one all have time. Their own egos, who all have their own temperaments,
very definitive
who all want you to talk about one thing. And then you have a network that's telling you what they want you
and
to do.
And literally in your ear, like and you have an earpiece in, which I think people don't realize. And they might say, push them harder on this.
Yeah. Or, well, there's like a full audience. So the audience is kind of fueling the energy in the room. So sometimes, like, even if the first person doesn't feel combative, if the audience is like, ooh, or ah, then they, because mind you, these are reality stars. So they're very much ego based. So they respond to that. So I'm dealing with a control room full of people talking to me. It's not one person. It's a control room full of people in my ear. I have the audience. I have the cast members who are talking, who I need to try to pay attention to. You know, I have questions that we've already had mapped out, a floor director, prompter. So it's a lot of moving pieces to navigate and still be able to have like fluid conversations that feel natural and still get some type of result from people who don't want to answer your questions. Like, they want to be at the reunion and they want to be able to say whatever they want to say, but the questions are never going to be geared to cater to them. So if you cheated or had a threesome on your wife and I have to ask you about that, imagine how I'm going to be met. So I'm dealing with all of that. And then you get somebody in your comments.
And also, it's not your fault you have to ask that question. It's their behavior.
Well, and that's the thing. And they don't want you to talk about the behavior on camera that they signed up for. So you're dealing
with... you're literally getting paid for.
I'm like, I didn't make this up.
You're getting paid for that behavior.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a...
Sorry, that's I have a smart home, so someone's at my front
door. Deb got this fancy house. I just hear people at my gate.
We at the ranch.
It's when I get people in my comments like, you didn't do this or you didn't, and also they edit it however they see fit. So I very well may have asked the question and they chose not to include it. Sometimes the things that I want to ask are obviously more deep. Like, sometimes Mona will be in my ear like, okay, Ayanla. She said that to me a few times, and they'll cut it. And I can't do anything about it. And it's not, I'm not mad at it. It's not, I will not be in the edit bay for that. So whatever they choose to include is this is not a show I executive produce or write on. It's a job as a host, and I enjoy it for what it's worth. And I leave it when I fly back to LA, and they can do what they want with it. And so, you know, people are very invested in it. I suggest they get careers in production to try to make their thing and see if they can do the same thing. You know, I encourage that.
Okay, before I get you out of here, because girl, when we be talking, like, let me tell you, me and Nina, our brunches go for 10 hours.
It's bad. I'm sure our significant others are like, are y'all really with each other, or are you having an affair something?
Are you
going all day
somewhere?
Because we can go for a long time.
And then, like, me and you, the way that we are, like the type of connection we have, if we don't have enough time, then we'll be like, dang, but I wanted to talk about that. Yeah. Why are all these other people here? Because I wanted to talk about X, Y, and Z.
We get mad sometimes when it's not just us at brunch. Because we're like, because and then we kind of click up because I'll be whispering to you like,
we'll just be whispering in the corner.
And I'm like, I don't want other people to feel, you know, left out. But sometimes it's the only thing for your ears. So, you know, we have to do our own solo stuff sometimes.
So what are some things for your spiritual health, for your self-care, your self-development? Tell me some, for our listeners, some podcasts, some books that have enriched you that other people need to get their hands on.
It's so funny because you have the 7 spiritual laws of success right here, which I just reread not too long ago. I have that. I have to say, I'm trying to think about, okay, I'm actually reading, okay, you guys are going to laugh at me. So I'm reading. I can't believe I'm gonna say this. I'm reading Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus right now.
OG book. Okay.
It's an OG book. I'm sure you've heard your parents talk about it. So,
hey, books never go out of style.
obviously you've got to put your own spin on it because it's a dated book. So there are probably going to be some social norms for men and women in there that you should ignore.
Like, however, on there, they're going to be like, if you're in the AOL chat room, you should consider.
And I mean, the author does kind of have certain things for men and women that are very like, some things you feel a little outdated. But okay, so my mom recommended the book because I'm in a relationship and we have growing pains just like everybody else. And there's definitely been some headbuttings for like, a man's way of thinking and a woman's way of thinking. Just like, oh, why doesn't he understand when I do this? I mean this. Why doesn't he understand when I vent? I don't want advice. I just want to vent.
Girl.
I don't need your advice. I know how to solve it.
Problem solve. Yeah, I just want to be heard. Yeah.
And so my mom recommended that I read this because she was like, your dad was frustrating me for a really long time. And I read this and it really, there are some gems in there that you can take to help improve your relationship. So I kept telling her I would read it. I never did. So she sent it to me. So I'm reading it now. And I have to tell you, as archaic as this book is, it has a section in it on how to talk to your man when you want to discuss something and when the best time is to do it. Because I realize that my timing has always been off, which is why I haven't been getting the result I wanted. And this book tells you about men, their moods, how men have this thing. It says men have this thing where they tuck themselves in this own mental cave. And if you're trying to talk to them while they're in that, like they phase in and out of it, that's just a man's way. If that's what the book says. And it's like, if you're talking to them while they're in it and you try to pull them out, you're going to get more resistance. So it's like when you feel like you're not being heard or listened to, you've got to phase the timing right. So it's taught me a little patience and it's taught me how to, and I was like, is this a bunch of BS? So I tried it, actually tried it today. I was reading it yesterday and I tried to approach something I wanted to talk about and realized how you approach things and how you phrase things can change. And it gives you, it'll tell you like how to talk to him, how to phrase it in a way that it'll be the best received. And I was laughing at it, but it worked today. So I was like, this is actually
note to self.
So that's what I'm reading right now. And you guys can laugh at me if you want to. But sometimes I feel like when I talk to my girlfriends about my relationship, we're all kind of like, they're dumb. You know, so so I wanted to just get a different perspective.
Right. Like when you get in like group conversations with women, it always will boil down to men are trash.
Like, it's just like, sorry, you know, guys, we love y'all, but like sometimes I just truly don't understand their frame of thinking.
Yeah.
Like I truly do feel like they're aliens.
We do have just such fundamental differences.
Yes.
And specifically because of the way society has boxed men and women.
You know how we got into the conversation? I was able to ease into it because Ayesha Curry's statements today that came out. It'll probably be a little dated when the podcast comes out, but that's okay. So she made the comments basically saying that she didn't feel attractive and she was insecure about her attractiveness because everybody knows that she's with Steph. So men don't approach her, and how she was saying that she still wants to be hit on even though she's married.
Ooh.
Because she feels like no one is attracted to her because they're so used to her being this mom and wife, and how it makes her feel a little insecure.
That's so brave of her to say that.
So that was my take. I took it as her being vulnerable. Most of us don't talk about our insecurities. My man felt that she was giving a green light for men to come hit on her.
Come on.
And I thought that was a very simple take.
Well, men are so territorial. Anyway,
well, that's
right?
What he said. He's like, you're giving men a green light to come and hit on you when we created this safe space together. So we had it first. We started with this debate because I was like, you're ridiculous. And then it ended up being able, I was able to kind of maneuver it into talking about us and, you know, our boundaries and social cues and what would be. And I was like, so you're not really upset about her being, you know, feeling insecure. You're upset that she said it publicly. And he was like, well, I guess it was just the way she phrased it. But we were able to kind of, I'm always curious as to how men think, because I think their thinking is more zigzag than ours.
What's funny too, like even Jess, and I had a conversation like this a while back, but I totally hear and get what she's saying. Mm-hmm. I think it's very brave that she would say that out loud.
100%.
Because the fact of the matter, like the way that men and women see the opposite sex and see what the, you know, proverbial green light or red light would be is so different. Because for a man, if a man is in a relationship, it makes women hit on them more.
That's what I said this morning.
Because 100%. They say, I see what you're capable of giving.
That's exactly the
same word. And I want that for me. I also, like, a lot of women, their worth is tied into whether they feel comparatively that they have one up on another woman, right? Like 100%. A better fashion or more men like them or better career or more money. Mm-hmm. So a lot of women's self-worth is tied into that. Yeah. So for a woman, for some certain types of women, if they see a married man, they're saying, if I can get him to pay attention to me, that means that I have value.
Yes.
That means that I can feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. And they see it more as a challenge for them to feel that they have worth. Yes. And they also see it as, oh God, I personally don't come across good men. So if I see somebody treating someone else really good, they're capable of it. Yeah. And I want and some of that at any cost.
Uh-huh.
Men, the way that men view women in relationships for the most part, the way they view women in relationships or marriages is they're too territorial. 100%. Oh, you have someone else. There's a chance.
They turn the light off.
There's a chance that you are being entered by another person.
Right. Right.
Not interested.
And that's what they were telling her. She was on there with Jada, which is why I don't think she was prepared for the conversation, which is why I don't think she articulated it in a way that everybody received it.
Yeah.
Because I think Jada has a way of making people open up that make them talk about subjects that they were not necessarily prepared for. And the way she articulated it, a lot of men had a problem with how she said it.
Yeah.
But I think she was just probably saying it for the first time out loud to even herself.
Yeah.
And she was around these strong women who are all experienced in marriage, where she felt like she could relate. Her mom was there. Her sister-in-law was there. Her, you know, Jada was there. Willow was there. She was saying these things. And I think she was kind of resonating for the first time about, like, what is my worth based in? I have this. And she was talking about how groupies bother her, that she has she has bad anxiety. She has to take medication for it.
Oh my
so
gosh.
For me, I felt that I saw the vulnerability in that.
How brave of her.
That's
wow.
I didn't see it as.
I can imagine that that was an incredibly difficult conversation for her.
100%.
And she is going to be hit.
If you go on Twitter later, it's people, you know, people are taking her to task for it. Mainly people who are seeing it in a selfish way. But my boyfriend was like, well, she's telling people that Steph doesn't make her feel beautiful. And I'm like,
that's not what it is.
100%.
But it's just, and two, it's like it, you know, not that we should be tapped into our ego, but it's the ego of it, right? Because 100%. For him as a married man, mm-hmm. you can still not act on it, but feel flattered that, you know, a lot of people think you are dope.
Yeah.
A lot of women want you.
He knows that off top.
Off top, right? And you can get that little, like, have that little smile when, you know, you're walking down the street mm-hmm. and you know.
You're the man right
that
now.
That feeling of, you know, that someone wants your time and attention or finds you attractive. It feels good.
Yeah.
Even if you don't act on it.
And imagine seeing your partner good. On that scale, get that attention.
And then you on the flip side, because of the way men
you're
think.
You're protected.
Men aren't going to catcall you and they're not going to. She's stunningly gorgeous.
Right.
Very talented. Very gifted.
Yep.
But men are never going to come out of pocket to tell her, like, wow, you look beautiful today, mm-hmm. or damn girl, or whatever ego boost, however it can come to you,
mm-hmm.
because the way men see women is, oh, mm-hmm. she's off limits, not gonna waste my time.
Right.
And so, that would give you a certain level of deficit.
Yeah.
Like, your man is getting that ego boost of mm-hmm. of being fed into in that way, and you don't get any of that except from him.
Yeah.
Not to say it's not enough or good from him, but it's a difference.
I understood exactly where she was coming from. And even though I may not feel the way she feels, I can definitely empathize with someone saying that. And I think in this world, we're supposed to be perfect. So anytime anybody's vulnerable, it's always up for debate and for people to be critical. But I don't think people understand how hard it is to be a public figure and be that your authentic self. And she was criticized when she was Betty Crocker and perfect.
Right.
And
now
she's being criticized for being vulnerable. So it's like what you were saying earlier.
Yeah, women can't win.
You can't win. So, you know,
so
it's
the
like,
thing is like, and
say what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. What's brought me some pieces. I know that no matter what, I'm not going to be universally liked ever.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's not how humanity is. Listen, if Jesus wasn't universally liked, what hope do I have?
It's so true. And I think when you let that go, I had that conversation actually with a coworker of mine because of a troll or something, and I was irritated. And she was like, you know, I don't believe what the people who hate me say, and I don't believe what the people who love me say online.
Yeah.
You know, because she was like, it's so fleeting.
It's so fleeting.
And it was such a great point.
It's wrapped in the way they view themselves mm-hmm. and the way that they view the world.
Yes.
Just like, you know, something that used to like be kind of irritating to me was like, I would know people, right, that were in the public space, and I would see that they would be very hurtful to other people. Mm-hmm. Like the personal version of them to me was like, oh, your spirit is trash at this moment in your life, right? Yeah. Like you are at your core not a good person, or you're steeped in narcissism, or you might be a sociopath, right? But because whatever they did publicly got attention, or
they kept doing it.
No. Like whatever they did publicly, the fame part of it, people would constantly message them. Yeah. You are the most incredible human being I've ever seen. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Because you like that they, you know, acted in this or played that. And it gives people this sense of, I can be trash inside because I'm still going to get praise. And that used to really irritate me, you know?
Because you feel like you're in the scary movie and you're the only one who knows, like, the killer.
Right.
You're like, I'm the only one who knows.
And
you guys are being fooled. And it's a frustrating place to be in.
But that's why, too, it's like you can't go off of the praise to the earlier point you were making. Yeah. Like, you can't go off of the praise or the criticism.
If you're in this industry and you're in a season where all you're getting is praise. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever reason, that season changes, which it will, because that's just the nature of the business. And you've put all of your worth in your career based on what these people are saying, you won't make it.
No.
There are people who we've started careers with who are no longer in this business because they couldn't deal with the ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's you have to be so solid in what you're doing that you won't waver either way, because while it's amazing to get that love, we all want it. It's, if it's your sole basis from these people who don't know you, it will ultimately lead to your demise because they have no say in what your value is.
And your moral compass is not in alignment, you know, like then you're going to start making decisions just based on how they'll be received or how you'll be perceived.
And you'll go through that where you'll figure it out. I've done that.
Yeah.
I actually had a reading.
That's the journey.
Yeah. I had a reading actually where the lady told me, do not change. When I was she told me I was going to get the e-job before I got it. And what she told me was, do not change your behavior for this network, because you're going to think they want something else, and you'll skew yourself to give them that, and they won't want you. So I made sure when I was doing everything at E, I was authentically myself. She just told, and she was right. I did go through those moments where, listen, I am around everybody who's a size zero and they don't necessarily look like me or even think the way I do. And so you think, well, damn, am I going to be accepted in this space? Like, I'm too much for some people off camera. So am I going to be too much for, you know? And I did have that thought. But I remembered her telling me that, and I made sure that I was like, you know what? I'm going to just give it. I'm going to just be me. And if it's not enough, then it's just not for me. But I can no longer temper who I am to cater to what I think people want me to be. And I didn't. And I got the job. And I remember her telling me, she was like, do not change who you are because of who you think they want you to be. And I keep that with me, because sometimes you want to waver a little bit. You're like, oh, it'd be so much easier if I could just be agreeable, or, you know, it'd be so much easier if I just didn't have this opinion. But
it'll keep you afloat. But then ultimately, what is your impact on the world?
Yeah.
If you're not being your authentic self,
1,000%.
What is your legacy?
What's the point?
What's the point?
And you
what's
know
the
what?
Impact? There Who are you helping?
There are days when I don't get in these like Twitter conversations. I just let everybody debate. And you know, my mentions stay empty and dry, but the days where I do get involved or I say something, it really resonates with certain people, not everybody, but there are people who it resonates with. And when I see that it's really being received, I'm like, okay, these are conversations I'm supposed to be a part of.
Yeah.
And as easy as it would be just to dip out and not participate, I just don't feel like that's part of my journey. Like I got this big mouth for a reason. It's intentional.
I love that. Nina, listen, as we close out this show, I just want to celebrate you. I celebrate you in private a lot, and I'm like probably the number one always on your Twitter and in your DMs. Like, yes!
Yes.
But listen, I want to celebrate you on my platform in front of the people that are listening, and just let you know that I think you are such a phenomenal woman. And I am so grateful and blessed, not just to have you in my life, but I'm just so grateful and blessed that you exist for the world.
Oh, thank you.
Because I think the impact that you're making, you're not even going to fully understand the depths of it and the range of it until you're looking back in 20 years and saying, oh, bitch, look at me.
I think you're right, especially because I'm so hard on myself. And it's even sometimes hard when you compliment me because I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
much.
I saw you tighten up. Like you got uncomfortable. Like, oh, like even right now you're crossing your arms. I know, right? I'm like blocking arms. Yourself off.
I don't know why. No, listen.
Open your heart.
Yeah.
Accept this love. Like you're just a phenomenal woman. And I love, like, I know you in my personal life, and I think that you're just an incredible friend. You're always there. You're like, you will show up when I need you. And I can respect when you're unable to, you know? Yeah. But in the world, in the form of what you do, you carry yourself with this standard of excellence and this level of integrity that I think is just, it's just stunning to watch. And I think it's giving not just permission to the people that want to stand up and be in a space like you, but it's giving them the actual blueprint of how to do it the right way. Even in this day and age where that's very hard to understand, especially a lot of young women are being pulled in these different ways that they think are the best way to get attention that ultimately are not going to get them close to their dreams. But you are a great blueprint for that, of just showing someone how to show up as your authentic self in all moments, no matter who it's in front of, and just how to have such a high level of personal integrity. So I'm just grateful for you.
I appreciate you so much. I love you.
I celebrate you.
You keep me grounded. And just, I think Van Lathan had tweeted the other day that you got him together in like 15 minutes or something. And I think I tweeted like, she's good for that. And you are like, you allow me to kind of sometimes emotionally vomit on you and just kind of like, oh, I feel like you ground me because you keep me, you check me, but you also like, you'll say, no, look, you did this right. This you could work on. Like, you know what I mean? And I think we all need somebody like that who, you know, just, it's just talking to you feels like a nice massage. And that's such a
girl, I'm gonna make that my Instagram bio.
Yes, girl.
A nice
it's
massage.
It's true. You must give a little soul massage to your friends, and we need that. So it's just, you know, it's good to have a good tribe. And I'm so happy that I'm a part of yours and you're a part of mine.
Yes. I see you. I love you. I thank you. It's been the Dropping Gems Podcast. Peace. Big thank you for listening to this episode of the Dropping Gems Podcast. This show is executive produced by Adrian Scott and me, Devi Brown. Our theme music was created by producer Day One, and the poem that you heard at the beginning of the show, well, that was created especially for us by award-winning poet Nnamdi Okafor. If you have a quick moment right now, please hit subscribe on the show. And if you like what you heard, take it a step further and give us a 5-star rating. Until next time, you connect with me on IG at Devi Brown or my website, DeviBrown.com. Be blessed.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro. The first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.